This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Best Bets for Pets. I'm your show host, Michelle Byrne. We're going to talk about a book today, but this is not like any other book. On Best Bets, I've had a lot of different kinds of books. This is probably one of the most interesting books I've read that deals with, part of the book's title is The New Science of Raising a Great Dog, but it's so interesting. It's science, a lot of science, but very interesting. So stay tuned. We're going to talk to one of the co-authors all about the book and what the great work that they're doing in raising puppies. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, Michelle Byrne here. And you know, saving cats is near and dear to my heart. Did you know that there is an estimated 70 to 100 million free-roaming cats in the United States? And without spay-neuter, that number will keep growing. Not only does spay-neuter mainly reduce the community cat population, but it also keeps cats healthier. Scooter, the neutered cat, is on a mission to give cats an extra life by making it hip to be snipped. Visit his website, givethem10.org, to help pioneer a better world for cats. That's givethem10, spelled out, T-E-N.org.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to welcome Vanessa Woods. She is the co-author of Puppy Kindergarten, The New Science of Raising a Great Dog. She is a research scientist at Duke University. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Michelle. It's great to talk to you.
I'm so happy to have you on. This book was fascinating, and I've had a lot of books on Best Bets since, oh my gosh, doing it almost 14 years. You know, you're a scientist. There's a lot of research and science in this book, but it's very interesting, and it's amazing what you uncover in this book. I'm getting ahead of myself. Can you tell us a little bit of background on yourself?
Sure. So I help run the Duke Puppy Kindergarten. And so we are a project that is trying to help graduate more service dogs. But along the way, we realized that, you know, service dogs have a lot of qualities that people are looking for in their pets, in their pet dogs. Because I think, you know, we've reached this real cultural shift in our society where dogs have, and cats and other pets have transitioned from being, you know, having specific jobs to now being part of the family. And, you know, that comes with wonderful benefits, but also a lot of challenges. So, you know, we just kind of like wrote this book to help people kind of with what we've learned.
What is the Duke Canine Cognition Center?
So the Duke Canine Cognition Center is part of Duke University, and we study canine cognition there. So we study how dogs think and how they see the world and how they solve problems, you know, and how this helps us help dogs in real life.
I read your entire book. I have to say, I'm a voracious reader, but I saw the cover and I thought, oh, another science book. This is going to be. And as I started reading it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is pretty fascinating. And I like psychology, but even if you don't like psychology, it's really fascinating what you uncover. I know this is probably challenging, but can you describe to everybody listening, just very kind of top level, what is puppy kindergarten?
So puppy kindergarten, it's kind of like not really a place. Like, we do have the puppy kindergarten at Duke University, but it's more a philosophy. It's a philosophy of raising dogs that's based on the scientific work that we've done that kind of recognizes that what we want from dogs now is different to what they were traditionally bred for. So, you know, we were working to uncover, you know, is there a breed or group of dogs that best fits into this new lifestyle? You know, that our dogs go everywhere with us now. You know, is there a breed or a group of dogs that love strangers that won't chew up and destroy your furniture while we're away? I mean, we just, you know, we have all these space that we create for dogs to be in our lives right now, but we also have this certain set of expectations. And so, you know, our goal was like, well, what is the breed or group of dogs that we're looking for? And it's really, it's not what you might think is, you know, everybody's got their breed of dog that they think is, you know, the best breed and based on a family dog or a dog they've loved. But, you know, what we found is that it's actually service dogs. And it's not that service dogs are particularly smarter or even like more trainable than other dogs. It's this, the secret to their success is really that they just, they don't have something called stranger danger. And really that is the key to everything else that we see on how service dogs move about the world and how they help people.
You mentioned breeds. So you work with canine companions to, you know, work with their dogs so that they get to a level to where they can go to assist people. They use mostly breed of, I think you said labs and retrievers.
Mm-hmm.
Why that particular dog?
So Canine Companions is the largest service dog organization in the U.S. They do basically every kind of service dog except for seeing eye dogs. And yes, the breed that they use is Labrador Retriever, Golden Retrievers. But actually, because they have this closed breeding population, they have actually created almost a new breed of dogs. So we also work with military dogs, and they are Labrador Retriever, Golden Retrievers too, but they could not be a more different population from the Canine Companions dogs. I mean, these dogs are exceptionally calm. As I said, I think one of the most important things is they don't have stranger danger. So they're really attracted to strangers. They have a higher level of circulating oxytocin in their brains. And so, you know, I think in trying to provide, you know, this perfect dog that can help people, Canine Companions have really created a new dog that really kind of like fits in to the lifestyle of what kind of we all want from our dogs. And that is to, you know, be able to sit nicely and calmly in a cafe, to be able to, you know, greet children warmly and be kind to the elderly who, you know, can behave themselves in public spaces. So, you know, our job is that it's actually really tough to be a service dog. And we, you know, take these group of puppies, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to help graduate more. So we sort of like test them every 2 weeks on this set of cognitive games to see if we can kind of help predict what it is about a puppy that allows them to be these great dogs.
So in reading your book, so every semester you have new puppies coming in. And I know you wrote the book during the pandemic and even still had a puppy class, a very small puppy class at your home, which must have been a challenge. But I can only imagine. So you have a puppy class and you also utilize undergraduates, volunteers to help. And you're studying the cognition of the puppies to determine their placement. That's a very vague assumption.
Yeah, no, that's about right. So all these sort of service dogs and working dogs, they all kind of have the same problem. It's that, you know, training is a really big part of it, but it's not enough. And so, you know, only half the dogs really make it. And, you know, there are millions of people in the US who could have one of these service dogs. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to kind of like look at the cognitive skills that predict success in service dogs and see if we can sort of, instead of waiting for 2 years to see which puppy is going to make it, we want to kind of like look at a puppy and look at their cognitive profile when they're really young, like 10 to 12 weeks old, and see if we can make predictions about who is most likely to get.
You know, in reading your book, what came to mind is, you know, if you think about, if, you know, for those listening and for anyone that's ever taught anyone, whether you're managing and training people or whether you've taught in a classroom, you have people that will do better, you know, in understanding certain things than others. So essentially, that's what you're doing with the puppies through different games.
That's exactly right. And one of the big lessons that we've learned in puppy kindergarten is that every puppy is an individual. And, you know, and this is like funny for us because we're used to studying dogs as a population, like what can dogs do and not good do? But like the real lesson, and we've had 101 puppies through the kindergarten that we've tested longitudinally. And what we've learned is that every single one is an individual. They have, you know, different cognitive profiles. We have puppy geniuses, and then we have puppies who like couldn't pass the test that pigeons can pass, and everything in between. And I think that that's what dog owners already know, is that, you know, every dog is unique. And what makes them unique is basically their cognition and their temperament, which together kind of like forms their personality. And what we're trying to do is we're like, well, what is this cognitive profile that allows a puppy to then grow in to this amazing dog that eventually ends up helping someone with a disability or with like veterans with PTSD? And, you know, along the way, we realized that, okay, every dog doesn't need to be a service dog, but there is something about service dogs that make them just great dogs. And so what we're trying to do with the puppy kindergarten is to kind of like share the lessons we've learned from, you know, raising and testing all like just dozens of puppies, you know, what people can do to kind of like help them. We did really the first large scale study of comparing different ways of raising them to see, you know, who would be more successful. We have kind of like tested them longitudinally so we can see which, when different cognitive skills emerge, because, you know, the puppy brain is not like a light bulb. They just don't kind of like wake up in the morning and everything's there. It's like different areas of intelligence come on at different times, and then they learn to master these intelligences at different times. So it was just like a super fun years-long journey into the puppy mind.
And what an interesting mind it is. You also have something called, or you have a site called Dognition. What is that?
So Dognition is like a citizen science platform where people can go and they can test their dogs and they can compare their dogs compared to other dogs. And so basically what they do is they sign up and they play the same kind of games that we do at the puppy kindergarten, but they play with their own dogs at home. And at the end, they can see where their dogs compare to other dogs in these different cognitive dimensions that we found are really important to success later on in service dogs. So things like, you know, how they read your body language, how much eye contact they make. Eye contact is like a really important one, actually. And yeah, we've had just tens of thousands of dogs participate. And the really exciting thing is that we've been able to make discoveries about groups of dogs that we hadn't really been able to do before just because of the large scale data that's been collected.
Okay. And in your book, you kind of answered this, but I still want to ask this because I think there might be more to it. You said that puppy kindergarten isn't really a place, it's a philosophy.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, what we were trying to say by that is that everybody can, you know, everyone can have a puppy kindergarten. And the philosophy of the puppy kindergarten is that, you know, what we, recognizing this cultural shift that is happening with our dogs right now, which is really kind of like following the cultural shift that has happened with our kids. Like it used to be, you know, kids and dogs, they would just like roam the neighborhood, they would run around, and even, you know, in my childhood, and I'm sure your childhood too, is that dogs had, they were free range. And they had a lot of jobs. Like they had jobs that they were supposed to do. We wanted our dogs to guard our properties, our families, our resources, our livestock. But now the jobs of dogs are very different. Like just like our children, they're a lot closer to us. We keep a lot closer eye on them. There's a lot more structure to their lives. Dogs don't just get to roam all over neighborhood and highways, just getting into whatever they want. They're just very much part of our family. And, you know, just trying to understand how we adjust to, you know, having dogs in this way. And the way we raise service dogs are really aligned to creating the kind of dogs that really best fit into our lifestyle, like dogs that are friendly with other dogs and other people. We don't need dogs to guard our houses. Right now, what we need is dogs who are friendly and able to go into public spaces, who are relaxed and calm or in new situations, that, you know, are able to do everything from jog on a loose leash to just sort of like sit calmly under the desk all day. So it's about trying to, you know, help people raise a dog that really fits into these expectations and the privilege that we're asking of them.
That is so true, because I think back of the dog we had when I was a child was kind of, you know, and this was true of a lot of families back then, the dog was the watchdog. It wasn't the family pet. Now, I mean, if that dog was the dog I had as a child was the family dog, watchdog, would not be in my bed or, you know, had a special place in the house. That's all the only place he was in. I think back to that now and I cringe, because the dogs I've had since then, they're my kids, you know, my fur babies. But we're going to take a short break and we're going to be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Vanessa Woods. She is the co-author of Puppy Kindergarten. And so we're talking about how dogs have changed over the years and how we're pet parents now, where our dogs are our kids. You know, we make them food. We've come a long way from since that dogs were, I guess, I think, what, about 1950s, dogs became less working dogs and became more in the home, but they were still given working jobs like watchdog or something of that nature.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, like, our dog was just kind of like ran around the neighborhood, sometimes had fleas, used to chase bikes and cars and everything, and that used to not be a problem. If they kind of like ate something bad and then were throwing up for days, it was like it wasn't a big deal. But now we need dogs to, you know, they're just in the home much more often. You know, they're not really let out of our sight. They're not allowed to roam around. They're like, you know, they need to be kept on leash. And so as that, you know, you can't have everything at the same time. Like, you can't have a dog who guards the house but is also really welcoming to strangers, to strange people, and to children. You know, there's issues with dog aggression and dog separation anxiety and dog behavior. And I think that, you know, all these problems that we really saw exacerbated by the pandemic as kind of like this sort of like this awakening moment where, you know, we have to understand the cultural shift that is happening, is that dogs are following the trajectory of our children. And then, you know, and I guess kind of like leveling the playing field to make it fair for them. And that means that, you know, you can't expect everything all at the same time of your dog. Like, you can't have a dog that's an alarm system, who guards things, who, you know, guards resources and protects your family, but then also have a dog that you just take to a cafe and then just kind of like let's, you know, expect to sit there while people come up to them and pet them and are friendly. So it really is this, just this realizing that our expectations of dogs have changed. And then, you know, making it easy for them to be these new family members that we're asking of them.
I couldn't agree more. Well said. And it's so true. I mean, thank goodness now we have better technology that we're watching our homes and our dogs don't have to do that job in most cases. You know, they can be the wonderful dogs they are. Okay. What's important for the pet parents to understand about their dogs with regards to cognition?
Oh, there's so many things, so many fun things. I think that to understand that different skills come online at different times. And so the expectations that we have of our puppies kind of can really be informed by this. So for instance, like the puppies we've tested, like when they arrive at like 8 weeks old, just in general, they just have terrible memories. So they can't remember something that they saw 20 seconds ago. And, you know, that this really doesn't start to mature until between like 12 to 14 weeks. So when you're like, kind of like your puppy first comes home and you're really excited to teach them all these things, you have to realize that their short-term working memories are like not fully developed yet. And the same goes for things like self-control. Self-control, like their inhibitory control, also, you know, similarly come, you know, it starts developing at about 13 weeks. And then really starts to, you know, really sort of like what we call maturation at about 16 weeks. So, you know, it's like these different cognitive skills are coming online at different times. They're kind of like light bulbs, different light bulbs that are flickering and then they stay on. And so understanding how the puppy mind works really is going to help people with their expectations of their puppies and what they can and can't do. And then also in some ways, you know, taking these skills and being able to enhance them. Like for instance, the puppies that we've had in the puppy kindergarten, one thing we found that we can really adjust is the amount of eye contact they make. So eye contact is a really important bonding mechanism. It's actually an important bonding mechanism between like parents and their babies, and dogs seem to have like really hijacked this bonding pathway, which I think is really funny. And so dogs now, you know, sometimes, you know, parents will see their dog like just staring at them for no reason. And the reason why they're doing this is because it raises their oxytocin, which then raises your oxytocin, and it creates this kind of like bonding loop that we see. And this has been really important for things like owner satisfaction with their dogs. You know, owners who have dogs who make more eye contact report having just like a stronger bond and higher pet satisfaction is really important from adoption from shelters, that dogs who make more eye contact are adopted more quickly. And so what we found is with puppies, just by playing this like funny little game for 5 minutes every 2 weeks really increases the amount of eye contact they make until they're about 20 weeks old, which is sort of when the puppy brain has, you know, almost finished developing. It's kind of like their last period of rapid brain development.
So, and you've probably been asked this question so many times, but you know how people say it's not the breed, it's, I don't like the word, but the master or the owner or something. That seems to be pretty true.
What do you mean? What do you mean by
well,
that?
Well, there's stereotypes on breeds. We're stepping away from talking about the, you know, cognition. It seems to be more so you can't stereotype a breed, you know? It's more how the puppy than the dog is raised.
Absolutely.
An extent. I mean, there's extremes, of course, but to an extent.
Yes. So we have actually, and so, you know, using the dognition data, the citizen science data, we did not find any evidence that the breeds that are famous for being smart are cognitively different from other dog breeds. In fact, when we ranked the dog breeds on the different cognitive tests, we had like different breeds that came out on top depending on the test. So it's kind of like, you know, people have different intelligences. Like some people are really good at reading, some people are really good at math. Well, there are different breeds that are, you know, perform better on these cognitive tests, and they're not the breeds that everybody kind of like thinks of as being the smart breed. So for example, you know, Spaniels in general tend to make the most eye contact. And then, you know, Burmese Mountain Dogs we found are the best at using gestures. Pitbull Terriers actually are the best at using working memory. So it's like different breeds have different strengths, and it's difficult to make generalizations about those breeds. And what we found really by the canine companion dogs is that if we could wave a magic wand and do anything, it would be that, you know, breeders would focus more on temperament, specifically this stranger danger in sort of like erasing stranger danger in puppies, because, you know, the canine companion dogs, just over generations, it's been extensively selected on that these dogs are friendly towards strangers. And that sort of small step has made these knock-on differences possible all other realms, because a dog who is attracted to strangers can sit quietly in a cafe. They can go and visit hospitals. They can sit quietly in dentist office. You know, dogs who are attracted to strangers, you know, you're never worried about children coming into your home or, you know, the friends of your children. So, you know, I think anyone who's had had challenges with their dog, like a lot of it comes down to, you know, anxiety, stranger danger and anxiety. And it's, we've really seen with service dogs that you can breed that out of dogs. So, you know, I would say that that would be the number one thing we could recommend, is that kind of like just shift the focus on dog breeds from what they look like to their temperament and behavior.
And interestingly, this is when stranger danger is a good thing. It's more about socializing your dog.
Yes. So
for a companion dog. So you have puppies that you're working with, and then they graduate and you have new puppies the next semester. What is that like? I would find it traumatic.
Oh, for them to graduate, it is wonderful and crazy all at the same time. No, the Duke Puppy Kindergarten has what, so we started the Duke Puppy Kindergarten because we wanted to, the impact that we would have on the puppies. So we had these two separate groups that we raised completely different ways. So we enrolled 101 puppies, and half of them we raised on Duke's campus with this flooding of socialization, like we call it, like the love flooding condition. Like, you know, they saw, you know, hundreds of people, they were raised by different people, and they were just, we sort of like created this kind of like puppy Disney world, where they would just receive so much love and affection and socialization in this really critical development window. And then we compared them with, you know, other puppies who were the control population that were raised, you know, similar to the way that you would raise them in the family home. And, you know, that was the kind of like the idea of the experiment that we started. But what we found was the impact of these puppies on the community has just been amazing. Like, you know, we have 100 undergraduates every semester, and the, you know, I'm not sure if you know, but there's this kind of like this mental health crisis on college campuses right now. The puppies have been so, like, it was just mind-blowing what a difference they made. And, you know, we didn't expect it, and we didn't, you know, we don't really understand it on some level, but it's every semester of puppies that comes in, the students are, find it so rewarding when they graduate, because they go, they know they're going on to help other people, you know, and continue on their journey. And then it's super wonderful, because then it's next semester, there's like, you know, a whole new bunch of puppies and a new group and a new class that they have to raise and you know, and love and train and test the same way. So yes, no, graduation is always bittersweet, but you know, in just like a month or two, there'll be a whole new class you have to take care of. So you're too busy to be sad.
Ah, so that's it. Okay. Because I would think, I've never fostered, I've always adopted. And right now I have three cats. That would not be very kind to fostering a dog. So I can't, but although I wish I could. But I would think being around all these puppies and then they're going on to do great things, I guess you don't have time to miss them, because then there comes new puppies. I love how you code them and give them names, and they all look the same in some classes, because they're either blonde, like chocolate, black, or blonde, right?
Yeah, just black, or we just have the black and yellow.
Black and yellow ones.
And labs. And yeah, you know, it's, Michelle, it's just like kindergarten. It's just like, you know, they graduate, you wish them the best, and then, you know, you don't even have time to think. And the new puppies are here. And so, you know, you have to just start it all over again. But it is a joy. It is an absolute joy. And, you know, when one of them matches and they are successful in their training, like, even though it's like 18 months, 2 years down the line, like, everybody is so happy, and we all watch their graduation and we all cry, and, you know, we're part of their lives for such a short time, you know, really that 8 to 20 weeks old, but, you know, they're just kind of with us forever. I remember every single puppy that's been through the kindergarten. So yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, it's just, you know, you're like a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah. And since this has had such an impact, and, you know, it's Duke University, do you see this going on to any other universities?
Like, you know, Canine Companions does have other campuses that raise puppies, and it's really student-led, and we work with another organization, Ears, Eyes, Nose, and Paws, and they're looking at starting the same thing. College students are actually a perfect population for raising puppies, because they you know, they can take these service dogs to class. If they're in training, they can take them into all these like public spaces, and they really have the time to dedicate to these guys. And then also the relationship, like the kind of like the interchange of support and love that the students really have with their puppies. I mean, you just hear them talk about it, and it's just a wonderful thing for them to do. So I'm not sure that anyone kind of like has a puppy kindergarten in the way that we do, but definitely college kids are becoming an important part of this kind of like early puppy training and puppy raising.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with Habri.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I've seen them at shows to where they're, I can't recall what the acronym is, but they're basically, they have the idea that, you know, a doctor should be able to write a prescription, go get a puppy or go get a kitten, because they do so much for you. You know, I think it's wonderful what you do. Let's talk quickly before we're out of time about the appendix. You go over supplies, home schedule, and poop. Why did you choose? Poop is important, these three topics for the appendix.
So we have dealt a lot with poop. It's been a big part of our lives. We are fascinated to the point of obsession with what comes out of a puppy, because, you know, that is a puppy who has regular and solid bowel movements. It's a puppy who can sleep through the night. It's a puppy who is healthy, because these are little creatures, just like children. They can just, you know, you can see the changes in their health so quickly and so fast. And poop is the number one indicator. And a lot of puppy parents deal with diarrhea. I didn't realize what a big part that would be of the puppy kindergarten. But yes, the appendix basically has everything in it that we wish we had known when we first started having puppies. So it is everything that you need, like a complete list of everything you need that we've developed over the years. And it's also, the protocol, because there's no moment you'll ever forget, like, you know, going to get wake puppy and finding just an absolute poop explosion. And it's so easy to panic. And it's been something that, you know, we've had to tell the dorm raisers, our students who like take the puppies into the dorm every night. And so we just thought that it would be useful for puppy parents at home too.
Oh, I agree. And I like the schedule too, because a lot of people think, I want a dog, I can't wait to get a dog. And they don't realize that there's a lot of time involved. And if you don't have the time, you have to have caretakers come in and take care of your dog, because when they're that little, they can't be left alone, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we just had a lot of people asking us like, what schedule are the puppies on? And I think this really comes into, you know, how puppies are so much like children now. I mean, when I was raised as a baby, I think I was literally just thrown in a playpen for like hours at a time and watching like the Wheel of Fortune. But now it's like, it's really like, it's kind of like babies. They have a very strict schedule. They have, you know, several nap times a day. You have to make sure that they have times when they're together, but then also times where they're alone. And the schedule is really just like a kindergarten. It's like, this is when they eat, you know, they have to go have a walk, and then they have recess where they play, but then these are when they learn their lessons, like all their manners, and then they get lunch, but then you need to take them for another walk. And so, you know, we were just giving out this schedule so often, you know, to everyone asking us what to do with their puppies, that we just kind of like decided that that was important to include.
I think it's great to include that. So what would you tell everybody listening if they're thinking, oh, another puppy book? Okay. Why should people buy your book? What is different about Puppy Kindergarten?
So this book has like all the science. Like, this is the first large scale study about raising puppies, I think, since, you know, the 1950s, 1960s, just to have, and it's definitely the first study of its kind to have, you know, over 100 puppies tested longitudinally from this period of 8 weeks. To 20 weeks. You know, it is an NIH-funded study. So, you know, it's the National Institute of Health. You know, we were published on our research. So it's really rigorous science. It's a really, we tried to make it a really fun book. We have a lot of puppy pictures in there, but it is serious science. And, you know, the goal of our whole project is to solve this really critical problem that a lot of service working dog organizations have is that they just don't have enough dogs. And so we really had to, scientifically quantify, well, what is it that makes a great dog? And, what are the cognitive abilities that allow dogs to become great dogs? Because, a lot of the time, the focus is on training. A lot of puppy books, it's like, oh, well, this is how you train them and this is what you do. And then training is really important, don't get me wrong, but it is not enough. So, we're in an evolutionary anthropology department and we understand the evolutionary history of dogs. And the fact is that dogs have not been bred for what we are requiring them to do today. And that's to live as family members and to live as part of our families. And service dogs are a century ahead of the curve. I mean, service dogs have always had to behave like family members. They've always had to be able to go calmly and, calmly without anxiety or nervousness in public spaces. They've always had to be able to be left alone without separation anxiety. They've always had to be friendly towards children, kind to the elderly, to be, not just well-trained, but well-behaved. And those are, they overlap, but they're two different things. So this book is about, acknowledging this cultural shift that's happened in what we expect of our dogs and really trying to give puppies a head start to be these great dogs. And, everyone who's had a great dog knows, what a great dog is. And this is kind of like, this book is trying to quantify it in a scientific way.
I think you did an excellent job of reaching your goal. It is very scientific, but it's not a dry science book, which I've read some of those. It's interesting. It's really good. And it's engaging, which is important.
Well, that's thanks to the puppies. They were engaging material.
Yeah, but you wrote it. So, some books that are out there are so what I call, it's not even a right word, but sciencey. They're very dry. There's a lot of formulations and things like that. And yes, for those that have the science mind and have done many experiments and all of that, that's of interest to them. But that's a small population of pet parents. So you did a great job. Vanessa, where can people buy your book?
It is at all independent bookstores. I love supporting independent bookstores. It is also at Barnes & Noble's and on Amazon. So yes, people should be able to find it very easily.
Wonderful job.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
I hope all of you enjoyed this show. This is a phenomenal book. It's called Puppy Kindergarten, The New Science of Raising a Great Dog. I encourage you to get it if you're thinking about getting a puppy, you have a puppy, want to understand more about puppies or your dog. It's a wonderful book. And you can go to the episode page for this show and there'll be more information and a link to where you can find out more about Puppy Kindergarten. I want to thank, my previous puppies, because Mr. Z is in puppy heaven, but my cats taught me a lot, even though they're not puppies. So thank you, Charlotte, Dennis, and Molly. And of course, thanks to my guest, Vanessa Woods, for coming on the show. Thanks to everybody listening. I appreciate you so much. And of course, a huge thank you to my producer, Mark Winter. Without his magic, this show would not be as good as it is. He does wonders. And remember, you never know what we're going to have next on Best Bets for Pets.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.